For that matter, I appreciate the invitation, the confidence that you have in me as far as that. This whole week is going to be on the book of Revelation, but as we go through it, I'm going to try and go through it in a layered approach that's not just too overwhelming. I'll talk about that in a little bit. The first thing I want to go over is just, again, approaching this. Admittedly, this is a difficult book, and I think probably most, if not all, Bible students would look at this and say this is probably the most difficult book in the Bible. You might get some disagreement over that. Ezekiel and Daniel get complicated, and some of the other prophets, but it's a difficult book, and so somebody might be wondering, well, what qualifies me to teach on this? Am I a theologian? I usually say no, but if we're studying the Bible, we're all theologians, as far as that goes. Do I have any type of a degree? No, I don't. Have I been to a seminary or a college? That's the type of questions that people who are don't know me very well, don't know the Churches of Christ very well. A lot of people ask that, well, where did you go to seminary? Where did you go to college and things like that? I'd answer no to those. I laughed. There's a movie that a bunch of us watched years ago called "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" And one of the things they're talking about is the one man's wife has left him, and she is dating and engaged to marry another man. And she keeps saying, "He's bona fide. He's bona fide." Well, I'm not bona fide either. But what I have done, I have studied the book. Do I have all the answers? Again, the answer is no. And I'm not going to stand up here and pretend that I have the answer to every little issue in the Bible or in the book of Revelation. But I have studied. I've studied the book. I will just give you a quick preview here of some of the books that I've studied. And I'll share some of these actually with you. Here's a book, Parallel Commentary on Revelation. This is a book called Days of Vengeance. This is by Robert Harkwriter. This is by Homer Haley. This is by Arthur Ogden. This is by Max King. Now, this is a book about the dating of Revelation. This is a book about a prominent theme there, and then also Haley's handbooks. I'm not showing these to brag, because I haven't read every word in every one of these books. But what I want you to see is that there has been a significant investment in study, a significant investment in time in trying to understand this book. And I don't have all the answers, but what I do want you to understand is I'm confident that for sure the main theme and a lot of the book we'll be able to go over through the week. Now, why this study? Why do we need to have the study of the book of Revelation? It might seem an odd question, but the simple answer is it's because it's been neglected. It's been neglected. I don't usually ask for a show of hands, and I won't ask for a show of hands today, but I have been associated, as I mentioned, with a congregation here for about 60 years. My mother and father were baptized here when I was 3 years old, and I'll be three in December. So I've been around here quite a while, and in that time, at least the years that I have been here, I don't ever remember a study of Revelation here. And by that I mean a thorough study of the book. And you may have when I've not been here. That's certainly possible. But I don't recall it over that time. And that's not a criticism of this congregation either, because that's the way most congregations are. They'll go through the books of the Bible. They'll start in Genesis and they'll go all the way through the Old Testament. They'll break into the New Testament, go through Matthew, all through the Acts. They'll go through the epistles of Paul. They'll go through the general epistles. They get to Revelation, and they go over the first three or four chapters of the book, and then it's like time to restart again and go back to Genesis. That is not unusual at all in a lot of congregations. Now, not all congregations are like that. And like I said, you may have studied this when I'm not here. I don't know. But to my recollection, I don't remember that ever being studied, or especially not in a great deal of detail. The result of that is that people don't know what it means, and to some extent are afraid to look at it. Imagine if you were a parent and you had children and you put food on the table, and let's just say peas. Every time you got to peas, you pushed that away and you backed away from it. How do you think your children would react as they get older? They're going to look at peas like they're something to be afraid of. Well, as we go through this study this week, it's easy to do that. When Randy talked to me about having a study on Revelation, I could very easily have said, how about a nice study of the book of Acts? Yeah. How many times have you studied Acts? How many times have you studied the gospel? And those are certainly necessary to study. But what we need to recognize is that we have to grow. In Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12, the apostle, the writer of the book of Hebrews, criticized the Hebrew Christians right then because they were not growing, they were not developing as they should. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12. Hebrews chapter 5, I'm going to start in verse 11. We read, About this we have much to say, and it is hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food. For everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, since he is a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. The point being here is that it is important for us to grow, to mature. Some of that is done on a congregational level. Some of it, probably the more significant part of it, needs to be done on a personal level. I, as an individual, need to study. I, as an individual, needs to grow. Because, just as an example, how often do congregations even come through the entire Bible and get to Revelation? Not very often. It's a matter of years. Some congregations have programs of study where they go through the entire Bible maybe every 3 or 4 years, sometimes more than that. But it's not all that often. Well, individually, you can study different subjects at home, and that certainly will encourage your growth. So we need to grow. We need to move on. And individually, we need to make some of these efforts. Why is Revelation so difficult to understand? Here's a couple of questions. Was it meant to be understood? Turn to Revelation chapter 1 and verse 3. You're going to hear this particular passage several times this week, I'm sure. Revelation chapter 1. I'm going to read the first 3 verses. You know, it's interesting when you look at a book. John has a habit of, in his writings, to explain why he wrote, why the reasons for he wrote. And this is similar. He says, beginning in verse 1 of Revelation 1, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show to his servants the things that must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ, even to all that he saw. Notice this. Blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy. And blessed are those who hear and who keep what is written in it, for the time is near. Now, that first 3 verses, John explains why it's written, but he ends those 3 verses by saying, you are blessed if you read this aloud. Now, he's talking about really in the assembly. Blessed are those who read this aloud. Blessed are those who hear it. And blessed are those who keep it. Now, you can't keep something that you don't understand, right? You have to hear something, you have to comprehend it, and then you put it into practice. And John is saying not only to those who the book was originally written, but he's saying to all, blessed are those who read this. Blessed are those who understand it. Blessed are those who keep the things written in this book. He does go on here and he says, because the time is near. But the book was written to be understood. The book was written so that we can do that. Is there a reason that it's so hard? I've heard a lot of people read about the book of Revelation and they say, well, it's written in this kind of secret code. It's a secret code, and they've implied that we lost the code book. You know, it was written back then. There was a special code. They understood it. We don't understand it. And so it's like you lost the combination to the lock and you just can't open it. But that's not correct. It was written in a specific style of writing. We'll have more to say about that during the week. But it was meant to be understood, and it can be understood. The other thing was, along that line, was it written exclusively for those people in the first century? There's no question when you look at the book that there was a target in mind. And by target, I mean it was written to a specific group, seven churches, and even broader than that, other people as far as that goes. But primarily, it was written to a target in the first century, and some people say, well, you have to understand it was written to that first century, and we're not in that first century, and so maybe we can't understand it. Well, when it comes down to it, every single book in the New Testament was written for somebody in the first century. So if we're going to dismiss Revelation because it was written to somebody in the first century, you could do that about all of the books. Well, we can't understand it because it was written to Theophilus, and we're not Theophilus. No. It wasn't written just for them. It was written to them primarily, but the apostles saw to it that these letters were circulated for others to see. The fact is, we don't understand Revelation because we don't know our New Testaments, like our Old Testaments, like we should. And that's really the bottom line. It is steeped in imagery or symbolism from the Old Testament. Every page there are references to the Old Testament. There are just a wealth of information that pertains to the temple of Israel, to the high priest, the worship of the high priest, to numerous accounts that occur in the Old Testament, and they're used to communicate thought by referring to these images. If you don't know your Old Testament, guess what? You have lost that key. But the key hasn't been lost. It's right there to read and to study. But you have to get familiar with a lot of these imageries. And if you do not know your Old Testament, you're not going to. I'm not going to mention names except to say this was not Dave Scarpino that I was talking to. But I was talking to somebody who was a full-time preacher at this congregation a number of years ago. And he made the statement to me at the time, and he said, I don't have much use for the Old Testament. And I kind of shook my head. I can't imagine a gospel preacher feeling that way. I don't have much use for the Old Testament. And you may not know it, but early on in the general history of the church, and I say general because it's not specific to the Lord's church, but just the process of it, that was a struggle. That was something that brethren really wrestled with. The New Testament's here. Do we need the Old Testament? Should we just leave those books to the Jewish people and we'll keep the New Testament? And the decision was made, and I'm sure not just by a human mind, but by the providence of God, was no. All Scripture is given by the inspiration of God. Well, here's the other thing to understand. By the time Revelation was written, and we'll talk about the date, planning that on Wednesday night, but we'll talk about the date about that. At that time, for the most part, while there were New Testament books written, there were New Testament books being collected, for the most part, when brethren talked about the Scriptures, by far what they were talking about was the Old Testament. And even Gentile Christians, as they began to study the Scriptures, there were Jewish Christians in the churches, who were able to explain a lot of the, not only the history of the Old Testament, but the symbology or the symbolism of the Old Testament. And that was absolutely important because if you're not familiar with the Old Testament, again, you will get lost in this book. It is helpful to study other books. I mentioned all of these books here that I've been studying and doing like that, but this is the most important book without any question. Your New Testament, your Bible is the most important book, but these are helpful. But I've read, I don't know how many commentaries because I didn't bring them all. I don't know how many commentaries I've gone through in the writings of different men. I've never found one that I can say 100%, yeah, that's perfectly right. And if I were to write a commentary, I'm sure you'd say the same thing about my commentary. You'd go through it and you'd think, that doesn't seem right, or that doesn't seem correct. And you'll probably say that this week during the gospel meeting. But here's the thing to understand. As we go through this, if you consult other works, first of all, you have to understand they're written by men. And men are fallible. But they can be helpful, they can be useful, especially if you can look at the book and see that the emphasis is on sound biblical reasoning. It's not a book that says, okay, this is what it means and that's moves on. What you want are books that say this is what it means and this is why. This is what it refers to. These are the imagery and these are the things as far as that goes. And look at that. Use the knowledge that you've developed to see if the reasoning makes sense. If the reasoning makes sense. Revelation is important because in many ways it is the consummation of the Scriptures. It is the pulling together of it. I used the illustration the other day. I've got a duffel bag at home. You've probably seen duffel bags with drawstrings or maybe even on pajamas or sweaters and things like that. But you've got this duffel bag and all of a sudden you get ready to close it and you grab that drawstring and it just pulls everything together. Well, that's kind of the way Revelation works. As you begin to study Revelation, as you begin to go through it, you see all of this symbology that starts in Genesis. And it goes all the way through the New Testament and you start to begin thinking, oh, I see, it's like a puzzle that's being put together and the book of Revelation is pulling that. Now that's not to say you can't understand the New Testament or the Bible without the book of Revelation, but things start to fall together. They pull tighter by studying Revelation. It is a really important book along those lines. The symbology and the eschatology of the book weaves through the Old Testament like a thread. You've probably heard of the term, the scarlet thread of redemption. There is a theme that goes from Genesis all the way through Revelation, and it's all about God's plan to redeem man. And they refer to that as the scarlet thread of redemption. You can see that at work through the entire Bible. Well, the symbology and the teaching of eschatology, or the last things, that also weaves through the Scriptures. And the same thing, as you begin to comprehend the meaning of Revelation, everything starts to fall in place. You'll find passages that you thought, you know, I never thought about that. That's what that means. That's the application about it. It's not that we've been misapplying these passages, but there's an initial primary understanding of Revelation, and that's important to look at. The prophecy of Christ after the fall of Adam and Eve, Genesis chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, where we read about you will strike his heel and he will crush your head. That's the first prophecy about Christ in the Bible. Do you know the fulfillment of that, although it didn't occur when Revelation was written, it occurred before that, it's talked about in the book of Revelation, and you begin to see, oh, that's when these things took place. That's when this crushing blow, and you may already know that from the study of the New Testament, but it begins to give you more details. The loss of paradise in Genesis is regained in the book of Revelation, or the depiction of it is gained. The blessing and the curses of Moses at the very beginning of the founding of the Mosaic Law, we see the fulfillment of that in Revelation. The Deuteronomy Covenant. This is something that I just really began to understand and read as I was preparing for this. The book of Deuteronomy is set up in a covenant structure. I'll talk a lot more about that later, but basically there's in the covenant in Deuteronomy chapter 28 in particular, as Moses is laying out this old covenant and calling the people to bind themselves to it, there is a five-step process. It coincides with many of the treaties that were from ancient days. Now, that's not to say that Deuteronomy was covering the treaties. It's simply trying to say that God used that structure to enforce upon Israel. And it starts out by talking about how great God is. And then it began to describe God's history with Israel. And then it goes through and it says how God expects Israel to behave. And then it goes over the idea of the blessings that they'll receive, and finally the curses that they'll receive if they violate that covenant. Here's an interesting thing to understand, and again, we'll talk about this more as we go through the week. As you look at the prophets in the Old Testament, pre-exile prophets, post-exile prophets, as you look at that, even the things like that, the prophecies in the Old Testament, they weren't there just to tell people what was going to be happening in the future. That was not the main point of the prophecies at all. That's what a lot of people tend to think is, it's just to let us know what's going to go on, and that's not what it was for. The purpose, the main purpose of all of the prophets was to tell the people to whom they were prophesying, you're not following the covenant. You better straighten up, or the curses that were promised are going to fall upon you. And to give you a little bit of preview about that, the book of Revelation is basically saying you didn't follow the covenant and the curses are falling upon you. And we'll see again more about that. But there is a very specific structure to that that we'll talk about. The Old Testament talks about the new covenant. We know that started at the death of Christ and on Pentecost, but much in the book of Revelation deals with that new covenant, the enforcement of the new covenant and the dissolution of the old covenant. The prophecies of the last days of Judah and Jerusalem in Isaiah chapter 2 verses 1 and 2. Let's turn over there for a second. Isaiah chapter 2 verses 1 and 2. You have probably heard this prophecy numerous times. And I'm going to read the first two verses. The word that Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be lifted up above the hills. And all the nations shall flow to it, and many people shall come and say it. I don't know how many times as a younger preacher I read that passage, and I started at the point where it shall come to pass in the latter days at the mountain of the house of the Lord. And I start there. And somewhere along the line, somebody pointed out to me that that specifies a specific period of time. Well, we know from other passages it does, but what about this one? And somebody said, when you read a verse, Brian, and they were being friendly, and I appreciate it. They said, when you read a verse, start at the beginning. What's the beginning say? In the last days of Judah and Jerusalem. And that's what this is prophesying about, the establishment of the church, the establishment of God's kingdom. But when was it to take place? In the last days of Judah and Jerusalem. And much of the scriptures talk about those, point to those days, those last days in there. And finally, throughout the Old Testament, we have the picture, the details of the temple and the tabernacle and then the temple. There's a lot of symbology in that. The vestment of the high priest and such things. All of this is approached or used in Revelation Ezekiel measured the temple. You know, John is told to go, or actually an angel is sent to measure the temple. We'll talk a lot about Ezekiel as we go through that. So as we look at this, what we have to understand is this. Revelation has a purpose, a specific purpose. That's not hard to understand. I think we can all recognize that. A blessing is promised to those who read it aloud. That means the public reading of the scripture. Not so much just reading it home aloud, but it was written to seven churches and then broadly to the whole church. But it was written to seven churches and they were told, you take this letter, you read this letter, and the one that reads it is going to be blessed by the reading of it. The people who hear it, they're going to be blessed by the hearing of it. And all those who keep it are going to be blessed. That should tell us how important John felt this message was, how important Jesus thought this message was. I'm going to go off a little bit here and just touch on something. Most of the commentaries that you look at, when they look at the book of Revelation, what they always talk about John, about John wrote this or John did this. Reading through this, reading through the book, and seeing the layers of organization, the layers of symbolism, the details regarding the high priest and the tabernacle and all of these things, I honestly question whether John had the ability to do that by himself. Now, we know from other scriptures that John didn't do it by himself. But I think this is more than just the fact that John was inspired by the Holy Spirit. And I don't see many of the commentaries talk about this. When you look at this, John doesn't say, I wrote this book for this reason. What he starts out in the first few verses, again, he says, the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's the first phrase in the book. The revelation of Jesus Christ. He doesn't say, this is the revelation of John the Apostle. And you know, there are commentaries that is the title of it. The revelation of Saint John the Divine. John didn't say this is my revelation. He said this is the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now why is that important that I bring that out as far as that goes? And I'm sure there are commentaries that do that, is that do mention that as far as that goes. But in other words, it's not a unique thought to me. But why am I making such a big deal of that? When you go through and you study this, and the deeper you study, it's just like a swimming pool. You start out in the kiddie pool and it goes until it's the deepest pool in the world. There are levels of depth to it. And I look at that and I think, I don't know that John could have sat down and said, I'm going to make it this structure. But I do know this. Jesus is all-knowing. And if you understand that this is the revelation of Jesus Christ, it takes away that wandering thought of how could John come up with all of this? How could John think on these levels? How could John go to these levels? One of the things probably the primary resource I've been using recently on this, he argues that John may have been a Levite. And I don't know of that. There's evidence for it. For example, when Jesus was on trial, the high priest knew John and allowed John and Peter to come into the courtyard or into the area where Jesus was being. And so there's a suggestion there that the high priest himself was familiar with John and allowed him entrance to that. It's not a suggestion. That statement is made. And the writer here tries to say that when you look at the book of Revelation and the detail that's mentioned regarding the temple, it had to be written by someone who had intimate knowledge of the temple. Maybe somebody who even served in the temple. And so he's suggesting that John may not have just been a Levite. He might have even been a priest at some point. I'm not going to argue pro or con about that. I'm simply going to say this. That isn't necessary for John to have been there, because this is the revelation of Jesus Christ. He is the high priest, the eternal high priest. It is Jesus, his Father, the Holy Spirit, that designed the concept of the temple, the symbology of it. He knew what every stone on the high priest's vestment represented. He knew the symbolism, all of it. And when he gives the revelation to John, it is the thought of God Himself that we see in the book of Revelation. Well, we could say that about every book, but as you study it, you start to think, man, this is so amazing, so intricate, that the human mind could not have come up with this. Well, the human mind didn't. That's kind of my point as we go through this. This is the revelation of Jesus Christ. And you'll probably hear me say, probably from habit, John wrote this or John said this and things like that. John was the writer. But Jesus Christ is the author. And that's an important thing to understand as we go through this. It identifies a specific duty to you. There's a specific duties mentioned in there that are applicable to you today regarding the way we ought to live. And so being afraid to study it is no excuse. I'm going to talk a lot more about that as we go into the lesson in the next hour. We look at the book of Revelation, and I want you to think about this for a question. This is a good example to think about. Who persecuted the people of Israel? It was the Egyptians, and primarily the Egyptian government. They're the ones that oppressed them. They're the one that set up these quotas and then began pulling supplies. Who was it that persecuted Daniel? Guess what? It was the government. King Nebuchadnezzar's court, you might say. Even though King Nebuchadnezzar loved and admired Daniel, it was the court, people of the court that persecuted. Who persecuted the Jews in the book of Esther? It was the government's people. Now, I'm not trying to be anti-government here, but I want to point some things out as we go through this. Who persecuted Jeremiah? It was the king. Who put John the Baptist to death? It was Herod, at the insistence, of course, of his daughter, but as far as that goes. Who put Jesus to death? It was the Romans, literally, but the Jewish people, the Jewish leaders in particular, who orchestrated the trial to put Jesus to death. Who put Stephen to death? It was the Jewish leaders that put Stephen to death. Who put James to death? Well, it was Herod. Why? Because he sought to please the Jews. And we could go on. Who persecuted Paul relentlessly? Primarily, it was the Jewish leaders, as far as that goes. Yes, there were some cases the Gentiles did do it, but this is all important. This will all be critical as we go through this. Now, here's the thing I want you to understand. In all of these, the persecution of the people of God, in almost every case, was orchestrated by people in governmental power. In almost every case, there were cases where individuals rioted and stoned Paul. That wasn't the government there, but it was just the people. But for the most part, when you look through that, when you look through the Old Testament, you see persecution coming from the authorities and doing it. Now, again, this is not going to be an anti-government gospel meeting. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm trying to point out is, as you look at these things, there is a pattern, and we'll talk about that pattern as we go through the book. Ultimately, it comes from Satan, who is manipulating people to bring about persecution against God's people. And we are assured time and time again that we will overcome. Overcome. Victory. Those are the key words to the book of Revelation. But here's something important you need to understand, and that is anti-Christianity is growing in this country. A lot of people make a big deal about the Antichrist, and they think that there's going to be an individual identified as the Antichrist really, when you look at John's writings, it's not anti-Christ that he's talking about. It's anti-Christianity. It's forces at work in the world who are specifically trying to destroy the Lord's church. Anti-Christianity. And brothers and sisters, you need to recognize it is growing in our country like it hasn't since the inception of this country. Anti-Christianity not only is growing, but it is being used to target our children, to assault our children, and teach our children that Christ is just a myth and the Bible is just a lie and God doesn't exist. Anti-Christianity will be defeated. I've got a video, video presentation I'm going to show later on during the week about that, to show that. But the book of Revelation, as well as the New Testament, but especially in the book of Revelation, we have that constant reminder is this: Satan has already been defeated. He's already been defeated. The war is over. Our lives today is simply the mopping up process. I don't know how long ago it was, but I did a lesson here called We Are Victorious. And it talks about how the Battle of Marathon, when the Persians jumped on shore and they charged into the Athenians, the Greeks, they kind of closed a trap on them and they defeated an overwhelming number of them. Well, then the Persians jumped back in their boat and they sailed off to Athens, intending to take the city because all of the soldiers are out here. And they sent one messenger to run all the way, 26 some miles, to tell them, "We won, we won." And in the process, he died. It's where we get the term marathon comes from today. But his message was, "We won the battle. We are victors." He was able to get out just a few, at least according to some historians, he's only able to get out one or two words, and then he collapsed and died from that long run. But that is our message today. The battle has already been fought. Jesus Christ has prevailed over Satan. The war is won. You just have to go out and let everybody know. That is a large theme of the book of Revelation, and we'll talk about it as we go through that. Appreciate your time. I think that's the end of the class, and I'm looking forward to the gospel meeting with you this week. Thank you very much.